Com.
This is the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, July 1st, 2025. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-801-1378. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Josh Salem. The producer is Hannah Francis, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Edwin J. Vieira, Antonia Gonzalez, Mandy Stapleford, Dr. Anthony Leisowitz, and Rick Smith. The interim evening news director is Hannah Francis. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Eric Leuschner. All of our KBOO programs are made possible by support from our members. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to the number 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth.
We're speaking to Jonah Rubin. He's the campus organizer of Jewish Voice for Peace. Thanks for being with us, Jonah.
Thanks for having me.
A lot has happened over the past week with U.S.-Israeli relations and what has been announced as the bombing of Iran's nuclear sites. Let's start, though, with Jewish Voice for Peace. What do you do?
Yeah, so I am the senior manager for campus organizing at Jewish Voice for Peace. We are a large national organization with chapters across the United States in various cities. My piece of the pie is I organize our network of around 50 student chapters at colleges and universities across the United States, as well as working with professors and academic staff through our academic council.
What has come into focus for you over the past year and a half? It's been an incredible time for student activism.
Yeah, it absolutely has. And I think that we have to consider the current moment that we're in when we're thinking about this moment of student activism. We're witnessing the final stage of the Israeli military's genocide of Palestinians in Gaza through relentless bombing and starvation. We're witnessing Netanyahu bent on expanding this war, as we just saw, as you just referenced, across the Middle East, most recently to Iran. And we know that the only thing that is going to stop him is unprecedented international pressure. And that's why we need to be doing everything that we can, including stopping the flow of arms to Israel in order to save lives right now. The focus on Iran over the past week has shifted Gaza out of the mainstream news for so many. And during that time, we've seen daily shootings of Palestinians lining up for food, trying to get what little food they can from the few distribution sites that Israel has allowed. We've seen the focus shift away from the West Bank, where over 40,000 Palestinians have been expelled from their homes, where the city of Jenin has been under siege and under relentless bombings. And in too many sectors across the United States, in too many places, in too many media outlets, this has been met with near total silence. The one place where we're seeing consistently this issue be brought to light, where we're seeing students focus on one of the premier moral issues of our time, is on college campuses. Colleges and universities have a long and rich tradition of being at the forefront of progressive change in this country. We think about the organizing in the 80s against apartheid in South Africa. We think about the role of students in civil rights, or more recently, the work in climate justice and the way students have led on that. But even long before then, I'm living in Galesburg, Illinois, the site of Knox College, where Abraham Lincoln had the most warm reception for his famous series of debates arguing for the abolition of slavery that took place at Knox College. Colleges have been at the forefront of progressive change for as long as they've been around. And that tradition continues today through the Palestine Solidarity Movement, through the movement that's dedicated to ending genocide, ending apartheid, I'm realizing a more just and more peaceful future. We've seen the students organize around encampments, around demands for divestment, around demands for academic boycott, for ending their own complicity, for saying they do not want their tuition dollars to be spent funding apartheid and genocide. And the reaction they've received from this has been tremendous.
I want to stay on the students for a little bit longer. What are they thinking about, Jonah?
And what's so incredible is that even as they're facing tremendous resistance, tremendous repression from their administrations and from the state, their focus is continuously on Palestine. What they are thinking about day in and day out is how to end the relentless attacks on their Palestinian colleagues. What they're thinking about is how every single university in Gaza has been bombed, has been partially or totally destroyed. How people their age, instead of worrying about what they're going to be studying and completing their homework and what they're going to be doing after school, are worrying about where their next meal is going to be coming from. That's where their focus is on every single day. They're doing everything that they can in order to exert their political pressure, to build power, and to bring about this change, to bring about this cessation in this great moral tragedy of our time.
So last year at universities and colleges all over the United States, there was a movement of encampments. But what was your take?
I mean, there were tremendous moments of people getting together to imagine and build another world. These were places where people engaged in studying, in conversations, in political actions, where students with Jewish Voice for Peace would engage in Shabbat and holiday services to celebrate our faith and the justice traditions within our faith, to work together to say these are not normal times and we cannot act normally. That if universities exist, they exist for the students, and that universities need to behave as responsible global citizens. They need to not abuse their students' tuition dollars. They need to not force their students to be complicit in horrifying human rights violations. And so there was this atmosphere of mutual support, of working with each other, of organizing with each other, of organizing with local groups around. Some of the encampments ended up doing support for unhoused populations in their area. Some of the encampments ended up working with local environmental movements, with local economic justice and racial justice movements, in order to see the struggles that we face at home as intimately connected through everything from the money we spend to the people we hang out with to the things that our politicians vote for with the struggles in Palestine.
I'm remembering articles in the New York Times last year, specifically, I think, about Columbia University, where people were complaining that folks from the local neighborhood were coming onto the campus. They were coming into the camps as if that was an indicator of failure. I didn't see any reporting about what you're talking about now, that the encampments were almost a form of local mutual aid. What are the students learning from this, and how does that relate to what they're studying in college?
I mean, this is why you go to college, right? You go to college in order to work with new ideas, in order to meet people, in order to think about how the world could look better and different than it does right now. And so these were students coming together in order to have those deep intellectual, those deep social, those deep cultural, to put those ideas into action in their daily lives. I mean, this is what colleges are all about. You mentioned seeing people from outside of Columbia's campus go on. I grew up in New York City, and I'd tell you, I didn't even know that Columbia was private property. It was just a part of the neighborhood. When I was in that neighborhood, you just went onto campus to hang out. It's absolutely shocking to anybody who grew up in that area that this public institution was willing to close itself off from the world, to literally lock its gates to the world in order to not have to answer a demand for justice. I mean, they were so committed to not even considering the students' demands for justice that they were willing to fundamentally transform what this university is for the worse, to make their university, to make their campus, to make their student experiences worse, also that they wouldn't have to discuss what human rights mean in our contemporary moment.
Okay, years and years ago, I'll even say it was in the 1980s, I was a student in the anti-apartheid movement. And we did a whole lot of things, but the whole world didn't come down on us, right? Like has happened with the universities last year. What forces actually made the universities do that? It's like the student movement itself had enemies. What a firestorm that was. Where did it come from and who touched it off?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know that there's any kind of one singular source that touched it off. I do think that it would be a mistake to attribute it all to the Trump administration. Prior to Trump's election, even, we saw universities already suspending students for extremely minor infractions like graffiti. We saw universities working with prosecutors and police for protests, for things that would traditionally be handled by internal disciplinary processes. We saw students be suspended and threatened with expulsion for silently studying in their libraries. And I think that this speaks a lot to the ways that universities have been transformed over the past 20, 30 years. The ways that universities have been taking up a politics of austerity, have seen themselves as being much more concerned with profits and losses, with managing their portfolios, with rankings in the U.S. News and World Report, with securing alumni donations, in ways that have made them far less tolerant of long traditions of student protests and that have made them react far more harshly. Now, on top of that, we see a Trump administration that has come in with its authoritarian tendencies, which Christian Zionists have taken up massive positions of power and implemented a program designed to fundamentally transform the place of universities and the place of social movements for justice within the American landscape. And so we've seen this doubling down on this type of repression since Trump has come in, but it's certainly not something that originates with them. It's certainly something that universities, with their ever-increased reliance on donor funds, with their ever-increased reliance on U.S. News and World Report rankings, with their neoliberalization and their attention to being money-making institutions, even if they're nonprofits, have certainly taken up and used in ways that have made them far more repressive institutions than they've been in the past.
So there are a whole raft of new laws all across the country limiting the free speech of students, specifically students, strictly limiting their ability to gather in public and other things too. Some of those are new rules that universities established, and some of them are laws that were passed. And yeah, I think that they were passed before Donald Trump was elected too. So how is that affecting your community of students now, and how will it affect them in the future?
Absolutely. It's a really, really great question. I'd actually like to answer it really narrowly in terms of how it's affecting the Jewish community of anti-Zionist students, because so much of this is being done in the name of our community, in the name of protecting Jews, in the name of combating anti-Semitism, from a group of people who have never cared about Jews, from a group of people who are willing to link hand in hand with Nazis and anti-Semites and Christian Zionists and have never had any concern about Jews or Judaism. And Jews know. We've had recent polling from GBAO that shows that about 2/3 of U.S. Jews thinks that Trump's repressive attacks on campuses are making Jews less safe, that the moves that he's taking in the name of anti-Semitism, in the name of combating anti-Semitism, are actually increasing anti-Semitism. That situation is even more so on campuses, where students feel not only unsupported by these authoritarian attacks, but also gaslit, as though their identities, as though the Jewish values, the Jewish traditions of activism and social justice that motivate their solidarity with Palestine are being weaponized against them.
To me, it seemed as if last year the students were actually leading the United States. I mean, can you just talk about that? What is the role of college students, university students, any kind of student in just society in the United States?
I think we've always looked to colleges and universities as being at the forefront of progressive change. And this was another moment in which we saw that, in which we saw students mobilizing and challenging immediately their university administrations, but also the entire rest of society to recognize the damage that we are doing by funding this genocide. It's our arms as Americans, it's us as taxpayers who are funding this system of genocide and apartheid. And it's us as students paying tuition, as consumers buying goods, as citizens of a country whose taxpayers are going to fund this genocide, to stand up and refuse this call, to say this cannot be done with our money, this cannot be done in our name.
I know this sounds like an obvious question, but can you just explain to people right now what is going on in Gaza and the West Bank? Can you just put it on the table?
It's not a silly question, and it's certainly one of the most like difficult and complex areas in the world where there's more misinformation than perhaps anywhere else on Earth. It's an essential question. What's going on right now in Gaza is the latest phase of a genocide. What's going on is a relentless bombing campaign, the latest in a long round of bombing campaigns that has affected a population, the majority of whom are refugees from the founding of Israel itself, and who have been subjected to round after round of devastating bombing campaigns from Israel that have decimated the infrastructure, that have decimated the housing stock, that has decimated the water systems of Gaza. And most recently, over the past 3-4 months, a near complete denial of humanitarian aid into Gaza, an inability of people to find sufficient food to live. There is mass starvation happening in Gaza right now, and there have created the conditions of humanitarian disaster, of people lining up at these food distribution sites, only to be gunned down by Israeli forces. I mean, this is the stuff of horrors that we are talking about right now. This is an annihilationist agenda that needs to be stopped, that we need to do everything in our power right now to stop. And that has gotten worse as world attention has shifted from Gaza to Iran. Right now in Chicago, we have Jewish Voice for Peace members on hunger strike, trying to bring attention to this, trying to demand that we stop sending arms to Israel, that we end our complicity in this genocide. We've seen repression increase across the West Bank as well at the same time. We've seen air raids in the city of Jenin. We've seen mass destruction and displacement of Palestinians from their homes as Israel has increased its repression, has increased its attacks across the West Bank through a continuing campaign of expansion, through a continuing campaign of seizing greater and greater territory. And we've seen within the borders of 48, within the Green Line of Israel, continued repression, continued systematic legal discrimination against Palestinian residents and Palestinian citizens of Israel. And so the totality of it is a genocide in Gaza and a system of apartheid across the whole of Palestine that is being funded by U.S. tax dollars and that is being committed in the name of the safety of my community, in the name of safety of Jews. And so it's why we're seeing more and more Jews stand up. JVP might be the fastest growing Jewish organization in America today, saying not in our name, saying this is not Judaism, this does not reflect us, and that we are there in order to stop this genocide, to save lives.
And I want to ask you more about Jewish Voice for Peace in a second, but the thing to me, the thing that really biggest difference between what's happening now in this student movement and when I was a young adult protesting against apartheid is that there's something about the United States and Israel. We're related. That's family. There's something closer to the United States about Israel than there was about South Africa. Can you just talk about the relationship, the personal relationship between our cultures and our countries?
Yeah, it's interesting because we are seeing a divide, I think, between the ways that American citizens, and especially the younger generation, relates to Israel and the ways that our political class and especially our aging politicians think about Israel, right? South Africa was absolutely a U.S. ally, and we absolutely had connections to South Africa. And yet you didn't hear this rhetoric of Israel being our best friend when you were talking about South Africa. You didn't hear this rhetoric of the U.S. and Israel walking hand in hand, the safety of one being intertwined with the other that politicians will say today. You didn't have them as the largest recipient of U.S. foreign aid, given all sorts of exemptions that we don't give to any other country on earth in order to continue funding massive military repression in Gaza and the West Bank in 48. I don't think that divide is reflected in the younger generation. either in the younger generation in the Jewish community or in the broader American public. Thanks in parts to the encampments, we saw massive shifts in the way that Americans think about Israel. When you look at the public polling of how many people are sympathetic to the Israeli government at the moment, it's at historic lows. When you look at the number of people who support Palestinian liberation in the current moment, it's at historic highs. The number of people who understand that Israel is committing massive violations of human rights, that Israel is guilty of the crimes of apartheid and genocide, it's at higher rates than we've ever seen it before. That's not reflected in our political class yet. And yet that divide can only last for so long. And so I really do think that we're in a moment in America when we're seeing a really stark divide between the way that people think about Israel versus the ways that our politicians are reacting to Israel. And that that divide is something that Jewish Voices for Peace and other groups within this movement are working on doing what democracy is all about, making politicians accountable to where the people are at.
One of the things, just shifting a little bit, one of the things that's happened is that the Supreme Court seems to be giving the green light to the United States government to be able to deport people to third countries. And so when you see that, especially students who have spoken up about Palestinian rights are just getting scooped off the street and dropped in these detention centers in Louisiana and in different places, and then they could be sent anywhere. Like, what impact does that have, even on the way you strategize as a community organizer?
Yeah, it's absolutely shocking. It's devastating. It definitely, when we're organizing, makes us think about risks differently and about who is able to take on risks and who is not able to take on risks. What is so impressive about the students, though, is I have yet to hear a single student say, I'm too afraid to be organizing in this moment, or I'm going to back off because of my safety. I've heard students who said, I have to shift the type of activities I'm doing in response to the repression. I'm more vulnerable. I'm less vulnerable. I can take on more risk. But I haven't heard anybody whose commitment to Palestinian liberation has been lessened by this repression. And in fact, just the opposite. I think that one thing that this highlights for us is how interconnected our different struggles are. As you just highlighted, the fight for immigrant justice and the fight for Palestinian justice are intimately intertwined in this moment. They are one. When we see ICE coming to our campuses in order to deport people, we don't know if they're coming after somebody who has been active in the Palestine liberation movement or somebody who got a traffic ticket 10 years ago. And yet our students are mobilized. They're working together in order to turn back this rising authoritarian tide in our country. We're seeing the same repressive policies that were used in order to restrict encampment protests be used against environmental justice protests. We know that these are one, that when we make our endowments transparent, when we say, university, show us what you're investing in. Where are our dollars going? Just tell us what we're investing in so we can talk about whether we want to invest in an arms manufacturer. Tell us if we want to invest in Chevron or ExxonMobil. Tell us if we want to invest in Palantir or Lockheed Martin as a university, whether that reflects our values. They'll say no. And so environmental activists, Palestine activists, we have the same cause. We have the same goal. We're seeing the Trump administration issue memos threatening universities for promoting trans rights, for promoting DEI, and for promoting Palestine. As ridiculous as those accusations are, it makes very clear that this is not actually about Palestine. This is not actually about protecting Jews. This is about a broad authoritarian project that is coming for all of us. And that the fight for trans rights, the fight for LGBTQ rights, the fight for racial justice, and the fight for Palestine are one fight. And we are seeing students have each other's backs in these fights like never before. The amount of people power, the amount that people are working to build these mutual relations to support each other before these very real, very dangerous threats is what's giving me hope in this current moment.
Jonah, what are the myths about politically active students today that our listeners should be better educated about?
It's a great question. So there's a number of them. I think one of them is that these students are asking for things that have never been asked for before. I like that you highlighted the connections with the struggle against apartheid in South Africa. The demands they're making are very modest. We want to see where our tuition dollars are going. We'd like our universities to be neutral. Don't invest in Israeli weapons. That's not neutral, right? We're not asking for universities to dismantle themselves. We're asking for universities to be transparent and to be able to debate the ideas that they claim they want us there to debate. So I think that there's a myth around these universities as centers of radical production, rather than as relatively conservative, with a small c, institutions that are trying to reproduce themselves without engaging with students, without engaging with professors, without engaging with their employees, because they have this momentum as an institution. I also think that there's a lot of myths specifically around Jewish students on campus. According to a Tufts University poll, a three-year study of Jewish students on campus that culminated in the fall, 45% of Jews on U.S. campuses do not agree with the statement that there should be a Jewish state in Israel-Palestine. Basically, half of Jews on campus are not Zionist. And yet, more and more campuses are implementing definitions of anti-Semitism that conflate Zionism with Jew hatred. More and more campuses are deferring in their policy around protecting Jews to Zionist institutions that want to outlaw any criticism of Israel. Meanwhile, our students are having their Passover seders canceled. Our students are trying to do rituals while having security guards standing around them in the background. Our students at UCLA had their sukkah, this Jewish ritual hunt that happens at the Fall Harvest Festival, get ripped down by fascist street thugs without any response from the university. And so when we're talking about protecting Jewish students on campus, so often we're overlooking the half of Jewish students on campus who do not identify as Zionist and who are just not part of this conversation. There's this huge myth around here that there needs to be some kind of political balancing act in a way that completely writes out what our communities are actually experiencing on their campuses.
Jonah, I'm going to bring this back to Jewish Voice for Peace, the organization. For listeners that are unfamiliar with it, what does the organization do? What are you working on now? And how can people plug in with you?
Yeah, so like I said, right now there are six people on hunger strike in Chicago demanding a cessation of arms to Israel. We're lobbying around that demand right now in favor of the Block the Bombs Act to stop sending weapons that will be used in a genocide to the Israeli military. The best way to plug into our work is to go to the website, jvp.org. When you're there, you can take action. You can send letters to your representatives. You can also look up your local chapter and join up with what's going on locally in your area. If you're like me and you're a little bit removed from the major cities, maybe you're not super close to a major chapter, we have daily webinars Monday through Thursday called the Power Half Hour for Gaza. That is a great place to plug in, get the latest updates, get the latest action items, take them back to your community, and work for stopping this genocide, work for a better future for all of us, and work to turn back Trump's authoritarian attacks that we're all facing right now.
Okay, last question. What's the most important thing to know about the current moment of, it seems like, growing conflict in the Middle East, a growing political movement against war, genocide, and nuclear conflict? What's the most important thing for us to know?
The most important thing to know is that our actions in this moment matter. It is so easy to feel hopeless and helpless in this moment, to feel like there's wars happening, there's large human rights violations happening, and they're happening halfway around the globe. What in the world can I do to affect it? And yet we're at a moment when these issues are being talked about in public, when they're being debated, when politicians are feeling unprecedented pressure from both those who would support these acts of genocide and apartheid and those who would oppose it. Our dollars, our money, where we spend it, who we partner with, where we donate our money to, is affecting the current policy around there. We don't know where we're going at the moment. And it could be to a very, very dark place. But but it could also be to a much, much better place. And that is going to depend on our organizing right now in this moment. And so whatever the issue that you are passionate about, right? I mean, for me, it is Palestine, is making sure that this genocide is not being done in my name. But wherever your passion is, whether that's queer rights, whether that's racial justice, whether that's immigrant rights, wherever it is, this is the moment when those issues are on the table and when we are deciding where the shape of history will go. We're in a moment when things can change and where all of us together absolutely have a role to play in this fight.
Thanks for making the time to speak with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
That was Jonah Rubin of Jewish Voice for Peace. For the Pacifica Radio Network, I'm Lisa Loving.
KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
Tune into KBOO every third Saturday at 10 p.m. for Queery. Dive into the spectrum of queer music as we explore artists across time and genre.
It's on my mind every hour.